I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernan. I created this space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between, without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners. Hello, I hope you've all had a wonderful week. Sean, my husband, has just handed in his last piece of work. So he was that's why I've been so quiet the past couple of months. He was doing a master's and working full time. So my focus is on the kids and keeping him going. And now he's done. So I'm so happy for him. He hasn't moaned at all. If it was me, I wouldn't have shut up, given out. That's just who I am. But he has done. I'm so happy for him that it's done. It's such a huge personal achievement and he has done an incredible job and you wouldn't even know that he was studying and under so much pressure. So I'm really proud of him, to be honest. So now I can get stuck into some of the other bits and pieces that I really wanted to put my heart and soul into for the podcast, for you, for the listeners, for the community that we have created. So just to touch on the event quickly, I'm going to visit the new venue next week. So hopefully I will have it all confirmed for you then, because I know there's groups of you actually waiting for the tickets to go live, so you can all come together with show off your new babies and your bumps and just chat. So that is exactly why I'm creating this event, and to hear other birth stories. So bear with me. Now that Sean's finished doing his thing, I'm going to crack on with mine as soon as we have a little break in between. So I'll crack on with this week's story. I chat to Gina. She talks me through her 4 pregnancies and 3 births. 3 very different birth experiences. Her first experience with pregnancy, unfortunately, she suffered an early pregnancy loss. So she talks me through that and the decision to go ahead and have another baby. It was just definite. That's what she wanted to do. And it was even more set in stone, I think, after she suffered loss. She then goes on to talk about her first birth experience, which wasn't one that you would hope for. She had an epidural. She ended up needing assistance with forceps. She had an episiotomy. It just wasn't something that she envisioned beforehand. Although we did chat about the lack of preparation that not everybody, but, well, speaking from experience, I did and she didn't do, as such, I suppose, the two of us, for baby. So after baby comes, you put a little bit of prep into your pregnancy, your labour, and then you're like, oh, what do I do with myself after the baby has arrived? So we actually speak about that together, and then she goes on to speak about her 2 other experiences. So her second experience was unmedicated. It was a vaginal birth and they thought that she had 3rd-degree tear. Thankfully she didn't. It was a 2nd, but there's a little bit of disappointment in there, and I will let Gina tell you why. And then she went on to have her 3rd birth experience, and It was an unmedicated vaginal birth, really quick, really positive, full of oxytocin, and exactly what she prepared for, because she put a lot of time and effort into preparing for her third experience. A really nice episode with three very different experiences. And I think stories like these are really important to hear, that similar to other stories that I've shared recently, that you can have, if you have suffered your first experience that wasn't one that you'd hoped for or envisioned, you can have that positive subsequent birth. So enjoy this week's episode, and I will chat to you soon. So Gina, you are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. Thank you for, I know I've put this conversation off for the past 2 days, so thank you for your patience. I'm looking forward to getting stuck in. So do you want to just give us a little introduction to you and your family?
Yeah, I'm a married mum of three. I had four pregnancies. One was an early miscarriage, and thankfully three regular births. So three lovely babies, three different experiences. So do you want me to just go ahead and start talking about
it? Yeah, talk us through your first pregnancy, yeah.
Yeah, so the first pregnancy, I'll talk about that one quickly. But yeah, as I say, we got married in 2016. And we're lucky enough to get pregnant straight away, kind of found out early, and was a bit shocked, I think, that I was pregnant kind of so quickly. I don't know why, for years we've kind of had it in our heads that we would have had trouble, or, you know, you just freak yourself out a bit before you start having kids, I think. And we had known a lot of people that had gone down the IVF route or had different difficulties. So was a bit shocked that we were pregnant. But unfortunately, I only had a couple of weeks of that pregnancy. We lost that pregnancy at about 9 weeks. But thankfully my body and system kind of did what it was meant to do, so it wasn't hugely, I didn't have to have a D&C or anything like that, so it wasn't, like, it was really upsetting and really tough. And then when that happened, it just made us realize that nothing else mattered, that we just wanted to have a healthy baby. So we kind of went straight to it again and tried to get pregnant as quick as we could, and thankfully we were pregnant, I think, like the second cycle after that. And everything went well with that. It's just really, it's really disheartening and upsetting when you go through something like that, especially when you haven't had kids yet. Yeah. It's like the loss is just so kind of great, and you feel like you're never going to have them. So it made me quite nervous at the start of the next pregnancy, but thankfully everything was going well throughout, and had been going well. I think once you get to that 20-week mark and have your 20-week scan, it's a huge relief to kind of hear that things are as they should be and stuff. So for that pregnancy, that was 2017. So it would have been towards the end of 2016. Due date was the end of July 2017. So everything was fairly normal for that pregnancy. I was trying to kind of keep fit and look after myself as much as I could. And obviously it was the first baby, so I had a lot of time to kind of focus on the pregnancy and just doing all the reading up on, you know, just everything basically pregnancy related. I've been doing
and
pregnancy
classes. You did a lot of reading and research then, did you?
Yeah, I did. I was reading up like everything and anything, like, you know, you're reading daily, like on the size of what your baby is now and what's going on, all this, and you're like literally just nerding it up and finding out as much information as you can. There's just such excitement and you just can't wait to have this baby and meet it. So everything went well with that pregnancy. And as I said, I was doing pregnancy Pilates and I was trying to remain open-minded. Obviously, I had no idea as to how this baby was going to come, or, like, you know, I know that so much of it's out of your hands, but I was trying to kind of, you know, lay down the best foundation where, you know, go in open-minded, but, you know, kind of just be aware that a lot of it is kind of out of your hands as well. So I was due the end of July, and I went, I think it was about 4 days over, I started getting, like on the Friday, I think I had the show, and I started getting kind of mild cramps on the Friday night, which led me into Saturday, and they started getting a bit worse on Saturday, but they weren't really regulating. So you've done all the antenatal tests and stuff, and they tell you, you know, to wait until they're X amount apart and lasting for whatever time. But mine were quite erratic and they weren't really taking on a proper pattern. So we rang the hospital on the Saturday night and they said, look, just come in they were like, if you're having pains and stuff, come in. So we came in and they checked me, and I wasn't, like, I hadn't started dilating yet, but they kind of kept me in the hospital that night just to see if I progressed. So I was kept in the pre-labor ward, and I was up and down the stairs, and I was on the ball, and I was on the birthing stool and doing all the things to try and bring it on. That was Saturday night through to Sunday morning, but it didn't regulate. So they ended up letting me go from hospital. So I went back home again. Still was having pains through the Sunday and Sunday night, but nothing regulating. So we were so focused on these bloody contractions and getting them to a certain time and certain width, yeah, or certain length between each other and certain length of time. So I remember calling the hospital again on the Monday morning and saying, you know, this is still the case, but they're not regulating. They were like, you must be absolutely wrecked, but you're better off just to stay at home. They were just said, stay at home. You know, there's a better chance of, you know, it kind of regulating and you getting properly into labour if you just relax as much as you can at home. They're like, we know you're exhausted, but just stick with it. So then eventually, I think like by 4 o'clock on Monday afternoon, they started getting quite rapid, and just like there was a shift, there was a kind of a key change. I had been going through pains, but this, they started getting a bit more like unbearable. So I remember my mom actually called my husband, because she'd been with me the whole way through it as well, and I kept checking in and stuff like that, and she basically just called my husband, because she kept going, go into the hospital. I'm like, well, they're not taking me, like, I can't go in until they take me in. And then she basically got my husband on the phone and just like read him the riot act and said, get her to hospital now. Pretty much.
No, so better woman.
So we'd been so focused on the contractions. Then we arrived at the hospital and pulled up at the hospital. We had gone through, I think, like 4 or 5 o'clock traffic, got to the hospital, realized I'd forgotten my birth notes, so my big folder of notes that I had. And I was so freaked out by the whole thing that I was like, I can't go in. My husband was like, we're going, you're going in, I'll go back and get the notes or whatever. So they kept me, they checked me into the hospital and brought me to the pre-labor ward and checked me, and yeah, I was at like 1 centimeter. So they were like, we can give you pethidine at this point, it'll either relax you so you get a proper sleep, or else it'll kind of kick things off for you. So I'd agreed to take that. So they got the pethidine injection, and I was brought back to one of the beds then in the pre-labor ward. This was probably about 9:30 or so on the Monday evening, and they were just explaining that it'll either make you sleepy and drowsy, or else it'll kind of kick things off. And as she was saying that, I was like, I feel like this is making me kind of sleepy, drowsy. So the nurse was like, okay, husband, I think you should go home and we'll kind of monitor from here or whatever. So she sent him home, and I thought I was kind of bedding down to have a couple of hours sleep, which I slept for about 20 minutes. I think he had just gone home, and then I woke up in like severe contractions. So what I would call, what I thought was pains and stuff in the day leading up to that, this was like kind of, you know, toe curling contractions. And I think, so the nurses, well, I was in the pre-labor ward, the nurses going around, and I remember, I think it was a nurse, there was just a nurse who had just started on duty, and I kind of said to her, look, these pains are really getting serious, can I call my husband? And she was just like, oh no, you don't need to, it's still only early labor or whatever. So I was like, all right, okay, grand. And then I was kind of like, this just isn't right. And then the other nurse that had checked me earlier on the evening came along, and she must have seen me as she was going by, and she was like, I think it's time for you to call your husband now. So called my husband, he came back in. So this was probably, I don't know, maybe up to 11:30, 12 o'clock by the time he came back in. And then as we were introduced to, they were bringing us over to the labor ward at this point. So I was introduced to the nurse that was going to be taking care of us. So she was asking, how do we birth plan, and what was our hopes for, what was my hopes for the labor and all the rest. And I said, well, I had a birth plan in mind, but you know, I completely know that it's, a lot of it's out of my hands and stuff. And I said, I'd hoped, you know, in a dream world, if I could do it pain free, or like, you know, drugs free and pain free and stuff like this, but at the same time I'm staying open minded. So she kind of advised, she said, look, you've had pretty much 3 days of early labor, so you're exhausted. So she was kind of like, it would be my kind of recommendation for you to take the epidural, but it's totally up to yourself. She was like, you're probably exhausted as it is, and to go through labor now, you know, you want to enjoy your baby tomorrow and stuff as well. So I was quite open minded and quite like, you know, I take that on board. I was kind of like, that's grand, you know. So I opted to have the epidural early on. But because we had so many days of focusing on contractions and stuff, so I had gone into the labor ward, had been set up for the epidural, and then I had gotten the epidural. So this was over a space of time or whatever, got the epidural. And my nurse was kind of like, not long after that, I remember just being on the bed, and I was so focused on the contractions and them getting to a certain length and stuff, that I turned around and I remember just being freaked out going, I was like, I can't feel contractions anymore. Like, yeah. What's happened? What stopped? And she was like, oh no, you're still having them. You just have the epidural now, so you can't feel them. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is brilliant. So I was absolutely delighted. And so I was kind of, at that point, I was told it could take like 5-6 hours for you to get to maybe 7-8 or whatever. So just rest up and get rest if you can. And we'll come back to you. Or, you know, we'll keep monitoring you and keep an eye on, keep a check and stuff. So I had the trace on and stuff as well. So that was grand. I think my husband was bedding down, hopeful that he'd get a couple of hours sleep. And we were just chatting away to our midwife. It had become very calm then. It was all just, it was a bit of a waiting game. And I wasn't going through pain anymore because I had the epidural. But then not long into it, I think one of the nurses were doing like a swap over or something. And there was the other nurse came into the room or whatever, and she was introducing herself. She seen was like how I was getting on. I said, yeah, delighted that I had the epidural and I wasn't feeling anything and stuff. I said, I just can feel kind of a pressure. And she was like, all right. She was like, you know that you can turn that up if you need to. You can turn up the epidural. I was like, okay. And then, so she called the other nurse back that had been with us from the start, and she checked me, and she was like, all right. She was like, we hadn't expected this to happen so quick, but you're now at 10 centimeters. So I had obviously just dilated really quickly. And how they explained it to me was that I had dilated to 10 centimeters, but the baby's head wasn't down the birth canal enough. So it ended up being a case of being told that I had to kind of start to push, and that the baby was kind of a bit further back. But like, we need to keep checking the baby too, to see that its oxygen levels are okay, and that it's going to be okay. It's going to take a bit more work to get. So there was, and there was talk of potentially having to go for a cesarean, all these different things. They were trying to monitor the situation, but you could tell that it was getting quite quickly kind of turned from very calm to all of a sudden kind of, we need to get the baby out type thing, and we need to see how well it's doing. So they started doing the pin prick tests on the baby's head just to see how its oxygen levels were. And thankfully they were good. So there was quite a bit of pushing. And yeah, it went from us just being in the room with the midwife to then like lots of people being in the room. I think it was touch and go at one point. They were thinking of going up for a section. And they were just explaining to me, we kept having to sign all these forms and stuff as each thing was kind of, you know, like as they were kind of presenting different options, we had to sign forms, you know, to kind of agree with it. And then in the end, so baby was born, but so she had to be born with forceps and suction and an episiotomy. So, but thankfully she arrived and she was safe and well and all was grand, thankfully. But yeah, it just kind of hit this kind of hairy moment towards the end, where it had gone from being just calm and relaxed to all of a sudden a lot of hands on deck. And quite, because I had the epidural, I couldn't feel pushing. You're pushing, but you don't really know what you're doing. Then there's all these extra people in the room, and there's talk of sections and all these different things. And then they have explained that they need to do an episiotomy and use instruments to deliver. So yeah, it was quite quite shocking, I think. But just the absolute relief when she arrived and everything was okay. She was a bit battered and bruised. She had like marks on her face from the suction and from the forceps and stuff. But thankfully she was well. We were just delighted, relief, just absolutely over the moon. Like just that feeling of insane love and just relief and everything, I think, just hitting you like a ton of bricks. Just so delighted that she was there and that she'd been come safely and everything was fine.
And how did you feel, I suppose, in the hours after giving birth? I suppose it was so shocking. Like you went from it being totally chill. You were kind of getting that relief from being in labor for so long. And then you went to get the epidural. You could probably start to talk about baby coming and get excited about being distracted from the contractions. And then it completely changed the other way. So how did you feel after the roller coaster of emotions and the physicality of everything that went on? I suppose the epidural wore off. And then how did you start feeling?
Yeah, like, and I mean, of course, it was my first baby, and we had lived in Australia before this, so we had just moved back to Dublin, and both of our families are from the West. So definitely there was a bit, and like we had been, I know that the hospital was quite busy and stuff like that. They're not really big on visitors, so we hadn't organised for anyone to kind of come or be there or anything like that. But I definitely remember the feeling of just, I remember the absolute relief when Eve was born, and just she had come and she was well. because there was so much stuff being thrown at us that, you know, we may need to take this route, and are you prepared for this, are you prepared for that. My husband was just signing forms and stuff, and it got quite hairy and quite sketchy. But there was just a huge relief that she was there. But then the aftermath of that then was like, because I remember even the day and like the day or two after that, like, you're so focused, especially on your first labor, you're so focused on the pregnancy, mm-hmm. and the labor and how the labor is going to happen, that you never really get your head around the fact that afterwards you're going to be in pain yourself.
Yeah.
So you're not only dealing with this tiny little baby who's just entered the world, you're in physical pain yourself, and you have the shock of the labor and how the baby got there and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. it definitely was a bit of a hairy labor, that one. And because it was first time round, everything was just so new, and you just had no idea, you know. In the end, she was like helped into the world with like instruments and stuff like that. So it was quite a garish experience, but at the same time, I had nothing to vet it against either. So I remember just being so relieved that she was there. But then the next day, my mum just appeared at the hospital. I hadn't arranged for her to come. She just got in the car and came straight there and came in or whatever. And I remember just being so delighted to see her, and so like the release and the relief of seeing mum there. Because I remember just being like kind of shell shocked is the word you'd use, like that you're just completely like delighted that your little baby's there, but you just never really put enough thought into the how she was with your first labor. You never kind of put as much thought into how the whole process and how it was going to unfold and stuff like that. So yeah, there definitely was a bit of shock and a bit of like shell shock and like just disbelief, I suppose, in a way.
I was literally going to say disbelief. I had this conversation with someone not so long ago that on your first, your baby's growing, and then you get to surgery, you're like, I'm going to have a baby. I can't even imagine, you know, you can't even imagine that you're going to have a baby in your arms because you've never experienced it before. And then mm-hmm. it is utter disbelief when you do have your baby, like, okay, this is what it's like. Who's going to step in here?
Yeah, oh, completely, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and then you have everything else that goes with that. So yeah, it could be really tough.
That first night in the hospital and just the disbelief. Like, I remember, I remember I wanted to do breastfeeding. I was quite strong on that I wanted to breastfeed. And thankfully, everything had gone well. Like, the first feed went well and stuff like that. But just, like, those early days, like, I was in such physical pain myself, like, that I just never imagined. You just really don't even understand that you yourself are going to be in pain or recovering, or, you know, you're going through this huge thing. But at no point during the pregnancy did I ever kind of think about that or think that that was going to be the case. It's all just such a weird bubble of, I can't wait to meet my baby and have my baby here and stuff like that. But you never, I didn't correlate the two, that like you yourself are going to need so much healing time afterwards. She was all well. She was a healthy baby. She was over 8 pounds. Everything was well and happy. I remember they came to me the next day and said that it was eligible for early release if I wanted to go home, and the midwives could come. And I remember just being shocked, going, no, I just had the baby like last night. Like, don't send me home. I don't know what I'm doing, type thing. Just didn't want to leave. So I did the 2 nights in hospital and then went out home. And yeah, there was definitely a bit of a time of just the pain and getting through the pain and just getting through the shock of the actual process and stuff like that, reeling a bit from it all, and just not an easy journey at all, but you're just overwhelmed by and consumed by all the hormones and the love that you have for this little baby. Mm-hmm. But it's still a rocky path because you're kind of trying to navigate through it yourself in pain and all over the place with emotions. And I remember the night we got home from hospital, I felt like everything had been going well breastfeeding wise, but then the night that I got home from hospital must have been when my milk actually came in, and I just became completely engorged, and like the baby, she wasn't able to feed off me. I didn't know what I was doing. I spent the night basically going around the bedroom crying, going, I can't feed her anymore. And so I spent a lot of time on that pregnancy just constantly reading online, just trying to find things. Like, I basically, it taught myself how to parent just from like reading so many. I was obsessive. Like, I was just reading. Whenever the baby was asleep, I was reading more stuff. I was like, yeah. So
Kelly was, mom is that the is it Kelly mom was the
one? Yeah. One of them.
Because I had no idea. I remember I sent my sister a text and I was like, so what's the story? Because my boobs were just swollen. I had no idea about milk coming in. And then when I rang my mom in tears and she told me what to do, and my sister was like, look at this website, Kelly mom. And I had no idea about this website. And it's just ridiculous that we do that to ourselves.
I mean, literally, my sister-in-law thankfully had her baby about 6 months before me. So she had given me pointers on before, but it didn't really mean much to me when she was telling me in pregnancy, but then I was like onto her as she was giving me. But I remember being on to the Lech League and everything like after those first couple of days and just explained to them about being engorged and like in tears. And she was like, you know, you can give it like just even give like a milliliter syringe of milk if you can collect milk even in a cup and all this. And just, yeah, the shock and the overwhelming experience of just milk and feeding and all the rest. Like, baby was good, thankfully. She was actually a really, really good baby. And I would say the first 6 to 8 weeks were kind of bar all of that, like the milk coming in and breastfeeding did still, I would consider it that it went well for me. And like, I was obsessive about using the like lanolin creams. My sister had gone through a really severe case of she just had pain and like sore boobs and like cracks and the whole lot. It didn't really work out for her, but then I had another sister that did. So I was just obsessive about using those, what do you call it? You know, the little things you keep in the fridge, the little...
The silver cups, is it?
No, you know, they're like little things you stick on to your boobs. I can't remember what they're called.
The compressing.
They're just basically... like a compress thing, yeah. So they were just, I remember just keeping them in the fridge, but I was obsessive about putting on the lanolin cream and putting the compress on just to kind of soothe them as much as I could and look after them, because I was really determined that I wanted to keep breastfeeding and that I wanted it to work. And I did. We breastfed for 6 months. But she was a really quiet baby at the start and calm. And breastfeeding was going well. Thankfully, I wasn't dealing with pain or anything like that. But then when she got to 8 weeks, she just became... It was after she had her jabs. I don't know if it was down to the jabs or what, but the jabs was the first time I'd ever seen her like scream her head off, like red face. And then later that week, then she just started having these screaming fits. And it just was on... I don't know if it was colic or what, but she did get a bit unsettled from about 8 weeks to maybe 5 or 6 months or so. But overall, she was good. But yeah, you're a first-time parent as well, so you don't really... You're just... clutching at straws for everything. It was a mad experience, but
you did it again.
I did it again. Exactly. So on to number two. Thankfully all went well. You still have it in the back of your head as well, just because you've had issues, you're kind of like, you know, will everything be okay with if we try and go again or whatever. But thankfully we got pregnant straight away. So there's 2 years and 4 months between our older two. And we were actually just moving into, we were living in rental accommodation with our first baby. I think when we had the miscarriage before we had our baby, we were looking at buying houses and doing all these different things. We just moved back to Ireland. But when we had the miscarriage, I basically just put my foot down on everything and said, right, everything else has to stop. I just want to have a healthy baby. So I stopped looking at houses, stopped doing all these things. I was like, the focus is to just concentrate on a healthy pregnancy and having a healthy baby or whatever. So we had had the baby, and then second time round we were buying a house or whatever, so that was kind of happening in correlation with the second pregnancy. So there was a lot of the stress of buying a house while I was pregnant with the second baby, but it kind of worked out. We were due to move in August and we didn't end up getting moved in until October, and the baby was due the end of November. So I was having like, there was delays with the house, and I was having like visions of like basically walking over the doorstep the first day into the house and going into labor. stressing myself out about it. But thankfully we got in the end of October. He was due the end of November, but because I was 6 days over on my first, although I had like 4 days of early labour, I was 6 days overdue. So because I had been 6 days on the first, I was telling myself, oh, you'll go on time, if not early. So we got in October, the end of October. He was due the end of November, and he ended up basically being the 14 days overdue. So
okay.
In Holles Street, they allow you to go to 14 days overdue. So my mum came up on the due date, and she was basically just staying with us until the baby was born. So she was going to be there with my first baby so that we could just head off to the hospital. So every night we're going to bed, and she's like, it's going to happen tonight. I know it'll happen tonight. And then there I was going off to bed every night and waking up the next morning going, yeah, no, I'm still here. Go fine. And so in Holles Street, they call you in for a 12 days overdue scan. So I was having that on the Saturday morning, and I remember just going to bed the night before, and I was really eager to go into labour and for the labour to start and stuff. But at the same time, I was always quite reluctant to be induced, just because my two older sisters had been induced on their first labours, and even my mum had kind of said the same. She had five children, and I think the fifth was induced, but she was saying it can be quite tough going when you're induced, or you know, if you have the you know, if you get away with it happening itself, it's kind of a more natural process, or you know, it's kind of not so severe on the body. So I remember just going to bed the night before the scan and just in my head thinking, I said it to my husband, I was like, if I go in tomorrow and they allow me to come back home without being induced, you know, if they offer me, we can induce you now, even though I wanted the baby to come as quick as possible or as soon as possible, I also had kind of made it up in my mind that I'd prefer to just come home if there's a chance that I can get those two extra days to see if it'll happen itself. That's what I'll take, type thing. So I remember just going to bed and saying that to him just before we're getting into bed. I remember being like, if I go in tomorrow and they allow me to go back home without being induced, I'll opt for that over if they offer me drugs to induce me tomorrow. I kind of won't take it. I'd prefer to just come back home and see if it'll happen over the next 2 days. So that was the night before, and the scan was at 9:30 the following morning, but I woke up at 4 with like pains. It just felt like pains. I needed to just go to the loo. So I went to the loo and I came back and I was like, yeah, that feels a bit weird. Like, or just feels a bit different. It felt like kind of more pain, but went back to bed and slept for another hour. So it's about 5 a.m. then I woke up and just had that kind of really severe feeling of needing to go to the loo again. So went, but I was like, yeah, something's happening here now. This is different. This is slightly different than like just needing to go to the loo. So my mom was there, so I ended up, and all I was so concerned about that time around was keeping everything kind of on an even keel for my little one. So she was,
yeah,
what was she at that stage? She was just gone over two. She was two since August. But I remember waking up, so I was up at 6. She woke at 6 then. I remember going into her room, and then my mom came down and she was chatting to my little daughter, and I still hadn't said anything. I was just chatting to my little one with mom, just trying to keep, you know, as calm as possible and all the rest. And then I just had said it to mum. I said, oh, I'm having some sort of pains or whatever. And she was like, oh, right, okay. And I was like, yeah. So she's just like, get to the hospital. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. Like, I'm coping, I'm fine. I just, you know, want to get up and get breakfast, you know, keep everything as calm as possible for my little one. So I got up, and I think in a way, I feel like because I knew I was going into the hospital, I was going in for that scan anyways, that was making me just calm and relaxed, because I knew that I had an appointment to go to the hospital. Like, there's always such extra stress, I think, added to your labour as to like when it's going to start, when do you need to go, what have you got lined up, how are you going to get there, who's going to drive you, how long is it going to last. There's all these additional things that you just can't control. So
yeah, lack of control, 100%.
Lack of control. So that's always hanging over you, and you never know when it's going to start or how it's going to end up, or all these different things. So I think what was keeping me calm that morning was that I knew I was going to Holles Street anyways. I had to be in there for like 10 a.m. appointment. So this was like 6 a.m., 7 a.m. And I was just downstairs then having breakfast and stuff and just having my tea. And then I got the ball. I was on the ball every night anyways, trying to bring on the labour. So I was just, I remember just my mum just kept looking at me out the side of her eye going like, is she okay? Like, or it was all very calm and really kind of quiet and stuff like that. And I was trying to keep it as calm as possible for my daughter. I didn't understand that I was as far on as I was. I think my mum was kind of like, okay, are you going to go now? And I'm like, yeah, the appointment isn't until whatever time. And she's like, just go on in, like, give yourselves plenty of time and all the rest. So we were going in, and I think I just started using the app, you know, to kind of time the contractions as we were going in the car. So we were probably heading in at about 8, like we live out in Kildare, so we had to give ourselves enough time to get in. It was a Saturday morning as well, so we weren't dealing with like work traffic or anything like that. But I remember using the timer on the way in, And I was about 6 minutes apart, according to it. So, but at the same time, I was feeling very calm, and my husband left me off at the door, and he was going off to park the car. And when I got to the door, the front door was closed. So I was like, okay, I had to walk around the back. And I remember just being like stopping, having contractions as I was going. But I still didn't realize myself how far on I was. I knew I was having pains. I was happy that I was having pains, and I was kind of tolerating them. But I don't think I knew myself. So then I was waiting in the waiting room to be called for the, it was just like an overdue scan that they do, basically just to kind of check. I think it's mostly just to check for your amniotic fluid and stuff like that, just to see how it's doing. But I was waiting in the waiting room, and the woman came out, and she must have called somebody before me, and she's like, you're next then, or whatever. And I was like, grand. And I was sitting there having pains and stuff. And then, so my husband was with me, he made it up from the car park. And then, so she called me in. I think when I got there as well, they gave me like a sample bottle to collect some urine. But I was kind of sitting there, and because I was going through the pains, I hadn't been able to collect a sample. And then I went in, they called me for the scan, and I went down, and I just had told the lady that was doing the scan that I'd started having pains. And she was like, all right, okay. And then she was like, well, I'm only doing the scan. So like, I can't, if you're in labor, I can't really tell how far on you are or anything like that. But, you know, she was like, they may take you down to the labor ward if, but she was kind of like, or what they might do is send you away. If they feel like you're in early labor, they might send you away to somewhere close by, because you live in Kildare, they might send you just to somewhere close by and then let it progress further. I was like, oh, grand, okay. And I think that was, again, comfort in knowing that it wasn't going to be sent back home to Kildare.
Yeah.
She was saying, we had somebody in here last week and they were sent away, and they just went over to Ballsbridge for like an hour, or they just ordered lunch or something at Ballsbridge, and within the hour they were back in proper labour or whatever. So I think there was a bit of a comfort in that too, as in like, I'm here now, I'm at the hospital. I'm here, I'm at the hospital. The people around me know what they're doing and stuff like that, you know. So just the total comfort in that. So as she was scanning me, I think I must have had a contraction, and she was helping me through it. She was just, you know, reminding me to relax my shoulders and breathe and stuff like that. She's like, okay. She's like, yeah, I think we need to get you seen by the labor ward or whatever. And I was like, okay. And then she was like, have you been able to get the sample? And I said, no. So she's like, maybe just go and see if you can get that for me in the loo. And I'll call the labor ward and somebody from there will come and get you. So I was like, grand, okay. So I went off to the toilet. As I was walking down the corridor, I had another contraction. So she's just like, okay. And then I went in to give the sample, but I couldn't. I think I had another contraction while I was in the toilet. And then I came out and I met the lady that had scanned me again. She's like, okay, I'm just going to bring you to the labor ward now. So she basically brought me down to the labor ward with my husband. And they were like, we'll just bring you in. My phone keeps slipping down. She was like, we'll bring you in and do... We'll bring you in and just check where you're at and stuff. So they brought me into the labor ward, introduced me to the nurse, and the nurse did like the physical examination. She's like, yeah, you're definitely in labor, like you're kind of far on, or you know, you're well on or whatever. And I was like, okay. And then I think it all just hit me at once. I think I started to vomit, and like, you know, I think just the realization that I was as far on as I was, type thing. But it just went so quickly from there. So my husband was a great support, and he was coaching me through the whole way. But I remember just getting there, and when she told me you're in labor, I started, like, it kind of came on furiously. I started to get sick, and then they were like, we'll just get you cleaned up and we'll bring you to another room. But all I wanted at that point as well was a bit of a guidance, I think, because of the experience I'd gone through in my first labor, where I wasn't regulating and I was having these pains, but they weren't ever getting to the like proper 6 or 5 minutes apart.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Lasting for whatever length. So I kind of just needed some sort of a guideline, or somebody to tell me that, like, you know, you're going to go through this for another hour, then it's going to be pushing, and then you have a baby, or else you're going to go through these pains for another 5 hours. I kind of needed that, some sort of guidance. So although I was going through the pains and I was kind of tolerating them, she had said, you know, if you want an epidural, you need to go for it now. And I said, well, I'm tolerating this, so can I see how I go for another, you know, let's maybe see how I get through the next half hour or so. And then I can make a decision on that. So I was getting through, but like they were fast and furious. And I remember the midwife came back, she kept kind of leaving the room and going to like say the progress to somebody outside, and then she'd come back and kind of repeat, or you know, she'd kind of talk through the process with me. So I felt a bit kind of like I just didn't know how long this was going to go on for. And I remember just being like, my husband had been coaching me so well, but I remember just being like, oh God, I don't know, like if this is going to go on. I was like, just tell me how long more this is going to last for, type thing. Yeah. She just said, look, I've done an examination on you. I was going to wait until 10 past to do another one. So that'll be an hour past at that stage. So I'll know kind of how far on you are. So I remember just looking at the clock, and just because I had a time frame, I was like, right, I can cope with that. Like I can get through this. And we were just looking at the clock and being right, going like, right, that's 20 minutes. She's going to do a physical examination in 20 minutes. So I was like, right, I can get through that. So I was in and out. I was going to the toilet. I was using the birthing ball. I was using the birthing stool and all these different things. I just kept having to keep on the move. But my waters hadn't broke either. So my first labour, I had to have my waters broken as well.
Okay.
The same situation this time around. My waters didn't go. I was having contractions and stuff, but my waters never broke. So I think I had that kind of 20-minute mark in my mind, and the contractions were coming kind of fast and furious at this point. And I think, I'm just trying to remember, I think I got to that 10 past mark. And I think she did another physical examination and she had said, I would see it as 8. Then she went off to speak to somebody outside and came back and there was a mention of 6. But I remember just feeling like I just had this urge to push. I was like, I feel like I need to push. And she's like, if you need to push, push. So I basically just remember just pushing for a little bit of time and then my baby was born. So I was, again, a bit shell-shocked because it was such a fast experience. And like just, I suppose,
you hadn't
because
felt
I was,
that before.
Yeah, exactly. And I hadn't because I had an epidural the first time around. And this time around, I was feeling the contractions. But I suppose in the lead up to going into the hospital, I was in the middle of labour, but I didn't realise I was as far on as I was. So yeah. That stood to me, I suppose, in a way, because I was kind of just going through it. But my husband had been a great coach, I have to say. He was marvellous through it. He was just like, and my midwife, they were just like, you're doing it. Because I was just kind of like, what's going on? Like, when is this going to happen? And they were like, you're doing it. You're doing it. Like, I'm like, what am I meant to be doing? And they're like, you're doing what you're meant to be doing. So that was a bit of a mad experience, yeah. Because, so gas and air, yeah, I had just gas and air on that labour. I would have got the gas and air as soon as I was, she did the physical examination and she asked me if I wanted an epidural and I declined, but I was given the gas and air then at that point. So I remember just sucking away on the gas and air and actually feeling kind of sick and just woozy, and that you'd suck so much of it that you'd end up just being like a bit like woozy and a weird feeling. It would almost make you feel limp like, and then you kind of get a bit of energy back again. It's kind of hard to explain, but
what position did you give birth in?
Oh yeah, so I was doing so much moving around while I was in labor, and then I remember just being up on the bed, and I remember just hitting a point of exhaustion. I was like, I'm actually wrecked now, I'm just exhausted. But I think maybe that might have been the transition period. I just had this feeling of, okay, stop now. I just needed to stop. So I was up on the bed. I remember just having this feeling of like, yeah, this is just too much now. But I was on my side then, just with like one leg in the air. That's how he was birthed. So on the
I love listening to people talk about transition, because it's just so familiar. It's like, okay, no, I'm actually all right, thanks.
Well, no, I knew nothing about it in that second labor. So like, again, my body did it itself, really. But like, I was a bit like a rabbit in the headlights, because I didn't know that I was as far on as I was. And it all just was a bit mental and crazy. And it happened. And, you know, my husband was coaching me through it. And he was like, you're doing it. And I was doing it. But I didn't know in my mind. I don't know if I didn't pay enough attention in prenatal classes or what, but I didn't know how far along I was, and I knew nothing about transition, or I knew nothing about the baby just arrived, and I didn't have a notion as to like kind of what was happening along the way type thing. I was in pain and it was tough going, but I was a bit shocked by it all, I think, and just it literally did just take its own form, and I was kind of just brought along for the ride and wasn't fully aware of kind of where how far on it was. So he came into the world as well, happy and healthy, thankfully. My waters weren't broke, but just as I said, that point that I needed to push, my midwife explained afterwards that my membranes were kind of starting to bulge, so she had to break the waters at that point.
Okay.
And that's how he arrived. And so he tore, so there was quite a bad tear. And then when they were examining me, they thought that it was a third degree tear. So unfortunately, I had to go to surgery. And plus, because I had only gas and air, I was just finding it really hard to tolerate even the examinations. They were trying to examine me to see how bad it was. And I had just birthed him and I was just in bits like, and I wasn't really tolerating it very well, the examination and stuff. So they made the decision that I had to go to theatre, which was really disappointing. So it's just really disappointing, because you're kind of separate. Like I'd gone through a vaginal birth and I'd gone through it with just gas and air and stuff, but then you're taken away from your baby and you're brought off to theater. So that was really upsetting and disappointing. And just remember being just so shocked by it and so sad that I was being taken away. And then I thought there was something wrong with him. And it was just that feeling of just being separated from each other and being separated from your husband and stuff. And it was just such a weird feeling, because you had the elation of birthing a baby and your baby being there and everything being well and them being well and healthy, and then you just had this anticlimax then that you have to go off to theatre kind of on your own, or you know, not with your baby, not with your husband. So that was a very weird feeling. And I remember being up in theatre as well, and you're with it and you still have all the adrenaline pumping and all the hormones pumping, but then you're just on this trolley waiting to be kind of examined and repaired. So that was a weird feeling. And I hadn't really kind of accounted for that or expected kind of that. So, but thankfully,
did they give you an epidural for that?
When I went up to theatre, that was the other disappointing thing. Like, I had a catheter and all that the first time around when I had the epidural and when I had my first baby, and that was a bit, you know, I'd never had gone through anything like that before. So in the days after, you know, when you have the catheter still attached and, you know, just the logistics of that is a funny thing to get your head around. So yeah, second time round when he was birthed vaginally without an epidural, but then they told me that I have to go up to theatre and get a spinal blocker anyways and a catheter and all the rest. That was all quite disappointing. I remember just feeling like so saddened by that. I was kind of like, what? I've just gone through all that. And now you're telling me that I have to have an epidural, or I have to have a catheter and all that as well. So that was quite disappointing. But anyways, in good news, I went to theatre, and when they examined it, it wasn't a third degree tear. It was only a second degree tear. So I had the repair there in theatre. and all was fine. I got back then. I remember just coming out of it and being like, where is my baby? Like, and is he okay? And is everything okay? And all that. So just, it just was a weird feeling just being separated and taken away. But thankfully he was fine and well. And we were back recovering on the postnatal ward. And he was all good. So he was born in December 2019. Happy and healthy as well, thankfully. And well, initially when we started our family planning, two was kind of our number. We felt like if we have two, we'd be delighted with that, and you know, it, that would be great. But we all know that what happened in 2020 changed the world. So he was born November 2019, and then I was on maternity leave with him, and potty training my little girl in early March 2020 when the lockdown happened. So that was, yeah, a very different experience for everybody in the whole world. And we were kind of in the newborn bubble from November 2019 to March 2020. We were just starting to come out of the newborn bubble, you know, where you really don't go and do much in the early stages of when you're at home with your baby. So March 2020 was just a bit of a shock to the system for everyone. But yeah, it changed things massively for us. Like, my husband works from home, has been working at home since March 2020. I was on maternity leave. I went back to work in September 2020 and again was working from home full time. So life just changed massively for us. And I don't know, it's a very, it's an unusual thing to say, but there is something addictive about having babies. So we talk about pregnancies and we talk about births and we talk about what crazy experiences they are and the pain that you go through and, you know, the absolute chaotic nature of it, but it is slightly addictive. I don't know if it's a vanity thing or what, but I remember just coming home from hospital, and we were coming home with our second baby, and just coming home from hospital. So I blame my husband that he set the seed, but I remember just sitting in the back with the baby driving home from Hollis Street, and I had gone for the repair and all that. So, you know, you're not in the best shape. I remember my husband just saying that. He was like, oh my God, this is so addictive, isn't it? You can see why people just keep doing it. I remember being like, what? No, I think that's it now. So that was the very early stages. But then as the months went on and everything changed with us working from home and stuff, and life just became so much more quieter. And we knew that we weren't going to be going back to the office. So we were kind of like, we kind of made the decision, look, if we're lucky enough to have a third, will we see, you know, how we go or whatever. So we got pregnant straight away. Thankfully, and we kind of said ourselves, I was going to be turning 40 this year, so we kind of had set ourselves a bit of a goal that, like, if we started trying and it wasn't working, you know, there's only so far we're going to keep going, and then we'll have to kind of call a halt to it or whatever. But thankfully we got pregnant straight away, and pregnant with our third baby. But because of the experience with the birth of our second baby, and as I explained, like, me being in shock through it, just through the labour and stuff, I was like, I really want to, like, I really want to understand what's happening in labour this time around. So, like, my body did do it for me the last time. So first time around, I had an epidural. I couldn't really feel what was happening. Second time around, I felt everything. My body kind of did it without me knowing where I was at, type thing. So this time around, I was kind of like, I want to kind of empower myself with that information and know where it's at, how long it's going to last, how kind of, you know, just so that you're just a bit more tuned in and a bit more aware of what's happening, and, you know, you can enjoy it a bit more without being so rabbit in the headlights, kind of shocked by it all. So, I had linked in with a women's health physio early on, and I had been recommended Pam.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can say, say the details?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So Pam Davis, so I had been given her details as a Pilates instructor early on in the pregnancy. So that was kind of life-changing in terms of pregnancy and empowerment and all these different things for pregnant women. She's an absolute powerhouse. And so I did a weekly Pilates course with Pam, and then I also did the optimal positions course, like, kind of later on in pregnancy. So she was just a wealth of knowledge and just tips, and just even in kind of recommendations and stuff like that. I really nerded it up on this pregnancy and kind of found out as much as I could, just about positions and timing and all these different things. So I also did hypnobirthing this time around in this pregnancy. So I was kind of trying to equip myself with all the tools that I could use to help out. But unfortunately, things took a bit of a turn for the worst. When I was 34 weeks, I was doing a night away with my friends. And just to kind of I was actually staying with my sister-in-law, who's pregnant too. We were staying in a hotel. There was a gang of us, but we were sharing a room. And I woke up the next morning. We just had dinner, and a few of the girls that were having drinks had drinks. But I woke up the next morning in what I felt was like wet, like moisture. So I was thinking, oh, Christ, that's my labor, or my waters are broken. So I remember just looking at the calendar to try and figure out how many weeks I was. I knew I was early. So I figured out that I was 34 weeks. And I was like, okay, this is early for this to be happening. But, you know, okay, just stay calm. And then as I woke up, or as I sat up, then I could see that it was actually blood. So that was hugely shocking, a find or whatever. So I wasn't really sure what was going on. So I had to call Holles Street straight away. And they just said, yeah, just go, come in straight away. And then I was like, I'm not alone. So they were like, oh, you'd have to go to your nearest hospital. So that was grand. So my sister-in-law drove me to Ballingar Hospital, and I was checked there. They did all the checks initially on the baby and everything was fine. They did different checks on me. They gave me the steroids just in case the baby had to be delivered early or anything. But all the checks were coming back good. So I had to just kind of be as positive as possible and just, you know, in hearing that everything was good, baby seemed fine. They'd done the scan, you know, everything looked fine. All the fluid around it looked fine and everything, but they couldn't explain what was causing the bleeding. And they also explained that that can be quite common. It can happen in a lot of pregnancies and it just goes unexplained. So I ended up being kept in Mullingar that night. And then they released me the following day. And they just said, look, if any fresh bleeding happens, you'll have to go straight to the hospital again. So I remember just going home, having that night at home, and then I woke up the next morning to new fresh bleed. So I had to go into Holles Street. So I was back in Holles Street. This was like 34 weeks. I was in Holles Street. They kept me in all day just to monitor and check and all the rest. And I was quite keen to get home myself because obviously I have two babies at home and my husband's at home on his own with them. So I was keen to get home, and I had been in there all day and they'd been doing the checks and this, that and the other, and they couldn't pinpoint what was causing it. And it had stopped. So I kind of forced it with the nurses to get home, but one of the nurses had noted on it that if there was no fresh bleeds, I could go home. So the night nurses ended up letting me go home. And then just as soon as I got home, we were saying cheerio to the babysitter. And I could feel that there was fresh bleeding happened again, but then this was quite strong, which was quite scary. So I ended up just being quite nervous, and just nervous for my husband too. I was kind of like, if he's driving me back into Holles Street, and I felt like I was bleeding quite a lot. I just was nervous about how much blood loss I was having. So he called an ambulance.
Terrifying.
It was, yeah. It was really scary that night. So he called an ambulance and the ambulance came. I ended up going in by ambulance and just remember being so scared because I didn't understand why I was bleeding. Mm. And there was no kind of, I wasn't getting any answers either. But when I went into Holles Street, then they were explaining that you can bleed so much more too in pregnancy. So pregnancy can cause your body to, you know, if you're bleeding, it can bleed out a lot. Because your body has so much extra blood as well in pregnancy. So this was 34 weeks, and this was like 3 days into being in and out. And then eventually they still couldn't pinpoint. All the scans were fine. The baby seemed fine, but they still couldn't pinpoint what was causing the bleed. So they were like, you're not going to leave until the baby's born, basically. So they were like, we need to check, keep checking, yeah, keep monitoring, yeah, keep monitoring the baby. And all these different things. So this was the pregnancy that I was trying to kind of, you know, be on top of. And it was all kind of taken out of my hands, as in, thankfully everything was well, though. They were doing all the checks. I had great care. I cannot in any way complain about the care. Great care in Holles Street the whole way through. But they kept doing the checks. So I was on like a prenatal ward. and they kept doing all the checks. So I was kept in. And they were also trying to balance out what would be the best decision between baby coming a bit earlier, as in, you know, would it be better to be induced a little bit earlier? The other thing with this was my due date was Christmas Day. So this is all going on in late November. And we were trying to figure out kind of, you know, make plans for going forward, like, would I be better to be induced a little bit earlier so that the baby comes a bit? But they just wanted me to get to 37 weeks as well to begin with, because they weren't sure whether it was going to, whether I'd go into spontaneous labor or whatever first of all. And I kept having days where it kind of would subside a bit, and so then I'd have a couple of days where the bleeding would stop. So I was in Hollis Street. And it was weird too, because you're in and you're not in any physical pain or anything like that, but you're a patient in there. And so I could get a couple of days then where the bleeding would kind of stop, and I'd be thinking, then, oh, I might get home and stuff. And then eventually another one would happen again. So every time it happened, it was really worrying and concerning. But every check they were doing was coming back with really positive kind of outcomes. So I just had to kind of stay positive the whole way through and know that I was in the best place and stuff. So week on week, it was just trying to get further, a week further into the pregnancy. And then in the run up to 37 weeks, we had discussions, and it was down to kind of me as well. I was eager to kind of, like, for the baby to arrive. There was part of me that was kind of like, I don't know if I could do the full 40 weeks. You know, week on week, we were trying to get a week further on. But then I was picturing myself going through the whole 40 weeks going, like, I don't know if I can go through another 3 weeks of waiting and all this and the unknown and stuff. So a decision was kind of made, or they had suggested to me that if I was happy, that they would, that potentially I could do like a artificial rupture of the membrane at 37 weeks. So in the lead up to it, it was kind of decide what's the best option. So I had agreed to that then. I said, yeah, look, if I'm on course and everything's okay and I can have that, then I'm happy to go ahead with that. So in the run up to it, I was doing all my optimal positions and all the different things that Pam had been teaching me, and all the hypnobirthing, and just to even get through the stress of being in the hospital, I was I was constantly with my headphones in, listening to Gentle Birth, and, like, you know, just trying to stay as calm as possible and just get through week on week and stuff. So they did find, like, a little, it was just like a kind of a dark area on one of the scans that they felt it could have been, it was almost, they explained it as to be like a bruise or something that they were saying that could have bled out, that potentially that might have been one of the reasons for the bleeds. Like, it was nothing they had checked. They were always having concerns about something sinister happening with the placenta, but in all the checks that they kept doing, that wasn't the case. So that was really reassuring, and delighted to hear that. So at 37 weeks, and again, in the run up to it, I wanted to kind of know as much information that, like, if I had to go through, like, if I had to go through artificial membrane, rupture of the membrane, would I then be allowed to birth myself? As in, you know, how was it going to work for me if that was the case, if I was induced as such? I wanted to do it the most natural way I could as well. Like, I know there's gel and stuff you could do first to kind of make the cervix favorable. Or there's the option of just the artificial membrane rupture. So yeah, I was trying to kind of figure out what way it would take form, or what form it would take if I was to be induced. So they were doing the checks, like, on the last, so, like, into 37 weeks, I think it was 37 and two. And they had explained to me that, like, if they did a cervical check and that I was favorable, that I could just do artificial membrane rupture. So that was what happened. I was glad of that as well. That was kind of the best outcome for me, because I was trying to ask, you know, I thought I'd have to go through continual monitoring and stuff like that as well, if I was technically induced and stuff. And it would be very different to the birth that I had kind of hoped for or planned for, where I was kind of just going to be left to my own devices. So they had good discussions with me, and I think they knew the whole way through where I was at and kind of how much, like, work and how much looking into this labor I had done, and kind of wanted to be as natural as possible and just to be left kind of my own devices as much as possible, which is unusual too when you're in a prenatal ward, you know, with a lot of obstetricians and midwives and everything on hand. So thankfully they did the check, I think, a couple of days before it, and I was favorable for just an artificial rupture of the membranes. So that happened on the 6th of December. It was funny, actually, it was lining up with my, he's now two, he was two at the time, but it was basically the day before his birthday.
Okay.
So I was gone from, like, 34 weeks. So I had a 2-year-old at home, and I was all these things going through my head where I was going to miss his birthday. I was still in hospital. I'd gone off to have this baby. I didn't even have one-to-one time with him that I wanted to have before I was due to have the baby and stuff. So it was all working. I was feeling quite guilty for my little two-year-old at home. And then as it turned out, the day that I was having my induction was like the day before his birthday. So I was thinking, if this happens now, for it goes on for a day, he's going to land on his birthday and
never,
my poor baby
never be forgiven.
Never going to forgive me. He'll never forgive me. So on that morning of it, so I just had the membrane rupture area at about 10 a.m. or whatever. And they had explained as well that they would monitor me. So once you have that done, they have to check the waters and make sure that they're clear and stuff like that. But if there's a chance there was anything with them, that I may have to be induced, or, you know, they'd have to kind of speed it up and all this. So I kept having these conversations, and kept kind of making it quite clear that I wanted to be left to my own devices as much as I could. So thankfully, when they ruptured the waters, everything was fine. It was running clear and stuff. So they kind of said, we can leave you for up to 12 hours. If everything is fine, you can be left for up to 12 hours without any other kind of interventions being needed or being done, as long as you kind of pass all those checks. So that happened at 10 a.m. My husband got in at about 12. I was just sitting around in the hospital, just, well, I had my waters just broken. So that was a bit uncomfortable and a bit, I was in and out of the toilet and all the rest. But I didn't really have any pains as such until, like, I think my husband went off for lunch or something at about 2 o'clock to three. And then he came back. I remember sitting at about 4 o'clock. There was still kind of nothing happening apart from me losing my waters and stuff. I wasn't as such going through pain. And then I think at around 5 o'clock, they came around with the tea, and I was sitting there having my dinner in Holles Street, as I'd been doing for weeks because I'd been in there for so long at this point. But still nothing. My midwife that I had that day, Emma, kept coming up and down and checking on me, but she knew that I wanted to be kind of left as well to my own devices, and she was great. And she really kind of, how do I say it? She really, like, supported me in that, you know, she was doing kind of as much as possible. She was leaving me kind of be and not continually down checking on me and stuff and like pushing things on me. So I think at about after five, it must have been about 20 to six or so, I remember just walking the corridor and meeting her. And I was saying, I feel like something's happening, like I'm getting a bit uncomfortable, but it's nothing severe yet or whatever. And she's like, okay, that's good. That's progress. That definitely seems like a bit of progress. So I was like, sure, I'll go back up to my cubicle or whatever and just wait it out for another while. And then after six, I remember feeling like I had the surgery. So I was here, like, looking up all my optimal position handouts and notes. I had prepped myself well from all the amazing knowledge that Pam had equipped me with, and I just had my headphones in. I was just on Gentle Birth all the time, like listening to my podcast. My husband was there, but like he wasn't really getting to say much to me, because I had my headphones in all the time. But definitely after six, I started feeling kind of surges, like kind of quite strong surges. I remember messaging my mom at about 20 past six, going, yeah, I'm definitely feeling something now. So there's some sort of action happening. And I think I then put on.
Sorry, did you feel excitement when you knew then that baby was on the way and you could kind of hopefully experience the birth that you had prepped for?
Yeah, huge excitement. Like when like in the lead up to it, I was very disappointed that I was in hospital and, you know, I never imagined this kind of, no, I can't give out the care that I got in those lead up weeks was amazing. Like, and it was brilliant. So I'm in no way saddened by that, but definitely it hadn't really worked out the way I had pictured where I was in hospital in the run up to it. But at the same time, from all the questions I was asking and from all the conversations I was having, and I was trying to do it as kind of input free as possible, I was getting all, like, you know, when they checked my waters and stuff and they were running clear and they were kind of explaining that, yeah, you can be left to yourself. So I kept kind of making that point of just, I want to be kind of left to myself and left to my own devices and with as little intervention as possible. So yeah, I was hugely excited to have my waters broken that morning, then to kind of just go through the day and not, I was just kind of feeling nervous though that I'd get through maybe 12 hours and then they would allow you to go to 24 hours, but if it wasn't happening then you'd have to be fully induced. So I think there was part of me that was kind of like, oh no, like, is it not going to happen type thing. But once I got to 6 o'clock, then I knew, like, I was definitely having the surges, and I had my headphones in listening to my Gentle Birth app. I put the TENS machine then on, I think it must have been at about 20 past six or so. And I was just walking around the room, the cubicle, with my TENS machine on. And it's a funny story actually with the TENS machine, because the first time round when I had all that early labour that I talked about, when I went in on the Saturday night, I think I had my TENS machine on. I remember when the midwife saying to me, maybe hold off the TENS machine until things get really hard, because, you know, it kind of won't work that well for you then. So I was like, all right, okay. So I didn't use the TENS machine. And then I told you the story of that, where I went and had an epidural and the whole lot. And then the second time around, I had the TENS machine with me and I never got a chance to even put it on. So this time around, I had lent it to my sister jokingly, and I was telling her the story about how I've never got to use it. She never got to use it either. She had her third baby about a year before me. So she was sending it back there. That was the one thing I was just mostly concerned about when I was in the hospital, was I need to get my TENS machine. So my husband went and met my brother-in-law. They live in Belfast, went and met halfway, and he got the TENS machine. So I must have got that on at like, and I was joking, like, because I had gone through two labours and never used it. And I was like, I'll never get to use this bloody TENS machine. But I had that on. I must put that on at about 20 past six, I think, when I was messaging mum. And I was in the cubicle. I remember going out to the toilet and just feeling like, at this point, because they had explained to me too, they were like, you know, your labour will probably start then when you're in the prenatal ward, but we'll move you. Once things start to progress, we'll move you over to the labour ward, and then you'll have privacy over there, and you'll have your own room, and you'll have your own midwife and all that sort of thing. So I was like, yeah, sounds good. So I just remember kind of moving around a bit more and going out to the toilet and just feeling a bit like, just feeling like I needed a bit more of my space. And I remember going back to the room and I called the nurse, and she came down and she's like, oh yeah, there's definitely progress now. Like, it looks like you're having contractions, like serious contractions. She was like, I was going to hold off doing an examination for now until we know that you're much further on. You know, are you happy enough with that, comfortable with that? And I said, yeah, I agree with that, that's fine. So she went off again, and I'd say within 20 minutes I must have belled her again, and she came back. I remember just being on the bed, like literally lying on the bed, just got that feeling again of exhaustion, and just had to lie down on my side. And she came in and she was like, okay, right, things have really, you know, things are really going here or whatever. So she was like, do you want me to do an examination? So I was like, yeah. And I think just as she was saying it, I started having another contraction. She was like, okay, I'm just going to wait for this contraction to pass and then I'll do an examination. So I was like, grand. And then she did. And she's like, okay, Gina, we just need to move you out of here. So she basically got, must have called them to bring in a wheelchair and stuff. Thankfully, I was in the ward, which is just beside the labour ward. So she basically got me into the wheelchair. And I remember them opening the curtain and stuff like that. I remember just at the time just being like in that state of like just so exhausted and tired and stuff, and just being like kind of collapsed in the wheelchair, but also being delighted because like I was like, this is it now. It's kind of happening, and it's happening on its own, and there's no huge interventions and all the rest. And they were wheeling me up to the labour ward, and Padma must have been a bit behind me because he was messing with bags, and they were telling, you know, he was sorting out, taking my stuff out of the cubicle and all that, and moving what he needed to move up to the labour ward. But there had been no mention of like figures as to what dilation I was at or anything like that. I don't think there had been a figure mentioned or anything, but you know, I just knew that I was getting moved up to the labour ward, and like it was happening and this had started or whatever. So I remember her wheeling me in, and she had, but my midwife had spoken to me that day about position wise, and one of my big fears was about tearing again, and so she was saying she'd help with the compress and stuff like that when it came to time. And I had kind of raised that a few times, that was one of my huge concerns. So I remember just being wheeled into the labour ward, and then she was like, I can set up the bed for you, Gina, where you can just go up, you know, like leave it kind of perpendicular so that you can just kneel up onto it and kind of lean over the back if that's a position that you would find favourable. And I was like, yeah, that'd be cool. So then when she just wheeled me in, she was like, you can just go straight into that position there on the bed if you want or whatever. So I was like, grand. And all I remember was basically her saying to me, you know, it looks like you need to bear down now, like, so, you know, we need to push. So I literally pushed, and I think she had just set me up with the gas and air, and I had like one pull of that or whatever. And then she was like, if you need to bear down. And I did. And basically the baby was born there and then. I just missed having him in the wheelchair. Because my husband said that he must have been a couple of minutes behind me. And he said that he just remembers like cancelling a call on his phone. His mum was ringing him just as he was walking through the door of the labour ward, and he cancelled it. And then so my son was born at 7:24. So he was saying that literally that was at 20 past when he was walking through the door, and then 4 minutes later, yeah, he was bored.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, it was completely a very different experience. He was born. Yeah, I was just on my knees, and he just came into the world, and yeah, like no pain relief, but it was just, yeah, it was a really amazing experience. Great care from the midwives, great lead up, kind of just the experience with Pam. And she's just, if I could just tell every single pregnant lady that's going through pregnancy to get on to Pam, and just, she was just such a great resource to have through pregnancy. So yeah, I'd hugely recommend her, and all the links and stuff that she gave us the whole way through and stuff was really, really, it really held through for the day, for the big event then. So yeah, he was all, and everything was fine. Thankfully, he was born happy and healthy as well. I did have a tear again, but they were able to just patch, or to, it wasn't a surgery or anything. She didn't have time for the compress, obviously. She had spoke to me about that before, but there was no time for any of that. So I was able to have like the repair in the ward and stuff like that, and got the lovely skin to skin time. And
Do you get to really enjoy that oxytocin rush then? And just cool.
Completely. Like it was just, I can't even explain it, because it just went so quick. Like I had literally, you know, I say that the surge has probably started at 20 past six and he was born at 20 past seven. So like, it was just so quick and so, such an amazing experience. Like it's really hard to explain, because like it's pain and it's, but it's just adrenaline, and it's just like, yeah, oxytocin and everything flowing through you. And my husband wasn't even part of it. Like I just had my headphones stuck in, and like he was afterwards going, what just happened? Like, because when he came back, I remember just being in the cubicle of the ward, and he was trying to set up, like he thought we'd be watching movies now for a while and just kind of bedding down as usual, bedding down for a bit of a long experience. And I just remember him, I was in the middle of having surges and he was still trying to set up the double so that the laptop could take both of our headphones. And I remember just sitting there with him trying to look through it, and then I'd be like, you know, having a pain, go away. And he was interrupting me with my gentle birth app and stuff, but it was just funny. Yeah, so he was basically just really involved for about the last 5 minutes of it, and you know, gave me that last bit of encouragement at the finish line and stuff. But yeah, it was an unreal experience.
Brilliant. I'm delighted to hear that you got to experience that and feel that, and you felt supported by so many people.
Yeah, I really did. Cool. Like I know it's not ideal, and I know that there's a lot of talk even about induction and stuff like that, and you know, people like not knowing enough about it, or you know, being induced when they don't need to be induced and all these kinds of things. And I know that I was technically induced. Yeah, I'm done now, that's it. Even though it's addictive as I say it gets, I'm done. I know I'm done.
That was gorgeous. There's so many parts of each of your experience that are really important to share. That was perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a million, and thanks.
Cheers,
for your
Gina.
Time.
No, not
it's
at all.
Amazing thanks that you do as well. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you would like to share your story, you're more than welcome to. You can get in touch over on the website irelandsbirthstories.ie, which I will link in the show notes. Click on the share your story tab and I will get back to you as soon as possible after you fill in those few details. You can get in touch over on Instagram, but I'm just not very active there at the moment. Enjoy your week and I'll chat to you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.